Here are some signs that working on your emotional regulation skills could deeply improve your life. Number one, when you feel sad, you find yourself wallowing in your sadness, like you lean into it. Number two, difficult emotions lead you to TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, Netflix. Number three, when you feel stressed, instead of doing something to relieve yourself of stress, you procrastinate, you feel paralyzed. In so much of the New Year's content that you see about glowing up your life, it is all about, strawberries in our water, more Pilates, more dinner parties, and all of that will glow up your life. But none of it will glow up your life in the same way that healthy emotional regulation skills will. All of the Pilates in the world could not make as big of a difference as the development of super healthy emotional regulation skills. Welcome to Grow with Intention, the podcast of people who want to create a life that feels good. In this episode, we are going to talk about how to develop these emotional regulation skills that I'm talking about, how to get better at emotional regulation. But before we dive into the how-to, we're going to talk about how not to, if you will, because there is so much unhelpful advice about emotional regulation on the internet. There is so much advice that will make you feel worse. And I say that as someone who has followed that advice, who has felt much worse for it, who's come out the other end and has things to say. The first thing we're going to talk about is scream therapy, is smashing plates. In other words, catharsis or venting. You see so much healing advice on the internet that's like scream therapy is about releasing the pent-up anger, and once you've released that anger, you will heal. And not even just scream therapy, also like really angry journaling, and this is actually something that I have heard before and very much followed. The idea is that emotions like build up inside of you, and unless they are expressed and released, you can't heal from those emotions. But the research actually shows that venting to release emotions like anger is kind of like putting gasoline on a fire. This is evidence that has spread over like 50 years. We know this, yet people are still promoting therapies like scream therapy and venting as healthy ways to release and heal our emotions. There is a ton of evidence to show that things like pounding a pillow or punching a punching bag generally don't help with emotional regulation and can actually make you more aggressive as a person, especially when you do them repeatedly. A study from late 2013 actually found that on those ranting forums, apparently that's a thing, forums where you can just rant about whatever you want, after ranting, people would describe these feelings of like calm and clarity. So they would get the feeling that their rants were really worthwhile and really helpful for them. But over the long term, frequent use of ranting actually would increase their levels of emotional dysregulation. They would see their anger levels actually increase in daily life. The second very popular emotional regulation tool that still like has its place is the name it to tame it theory. And this is actually something that I have talked about in my content, and newer research has come out to show that it may not be as effective as we once thought it was. So there's this really common saying in the therapeutic world, you've probably heard it, name it to tame it. The idea is that once you label an emotion that you are feeling, it tends to decrease the emotion because it taps into the more like rational, logical part of your brain, and the emotional part of your brain dims a little. But more recent studies indicate that naming our emotions can actually make regulating our emotions more difficult. In one study, people who named their emotions before regulating themselves reported feeling worse than other people who regulated without naming. They actually did a second study to confirm this, just because this theory is so popular, they were like, we need to make sure that we're getting this right. Emotional naming actually diminished the ability to reinterpret a situation in more healthy ways, and it hindered the ability to use acceptance regulation strategies, which we'll talk about later. When people would name their emotions straight away, it kind of crystallized that emotion for them. The next emotional regulation strategy, which is actually super popular, you see it a lot, is diving into your feelings, which kind of reminds me of catharsis. So there's this one study where the participants were divided into three different groups, and they were asked to think about an unpleasant memory, so something bad that happened that caused them to feel really angry or big emotions. One group was told to focus on the feeling and really connect with it, dive into it, so really feel their feelings and be in their feelings. 1 week later, their feelings about that memory were the same. The second group was told to think of the unpleasant thought and then distract themselves with different behaviors and different thoughts. And in the moment, they were less upset by the memory because they were distracting themselves. But a week later, not much had changed. Like, they still had the same bad feelings about that memory. Group three was told to think of that unpleasant memory, but review it like they were watching it on a TV screen. This is called diffusion. It's kind of part of acceptance and commitment therapy. It's just a generally helpful technique when it comes to memories. I use it a lot. They were less emotional reflecting back on the memory, and a week later, they were less impacted by the memory. They saw the memory from a new perspective, which reduced their emotional reaction to the memory. The big advice that you see on the internet right now is feel your feelings. And I think that's easily interpreted as dive into your feelings. The conclusion that I'm coming to here is diving into your feelings may not necessarily be bad depending on the feeling. Like sometimes diving into your feelings can be really unhelpful. If you're feeling like rage in a moment and you dive into it, that's not helpful. If you're feeling deep, deep sadness in a way that's unhelpful to you and you dive into it, probably isn't that helpful for you. So now we've talked about three strategies that are actually really popular, at least on the pop therapy side of Instagram and TikTok, that have a tendency to make you feel worse or do nothing. So now let's talk about the emotional regulation strategies that can actually help you, that if you use these repeatedly, can deeply improve your life. And I can say that because these are things that I have gotten into the habit of using on a deeply regular basis. And I can't really think of anything in the self-growth world that has improved my life more than really embracing these techniques and strategies. And I should say, like, I still have work to do. I'm an imperfect human being. I need to use these even more than I do. But having these, like, in my toolkit at the ready, life-changing. Wiring them into my brain so that they're a default response, life-changing. Now let's get into your emotional regulation strategy options. The first one I'm going to talk about is widening your options. For example, your partner comes home from work and they don't really greet you, they don't ask you how you are, they're just kind of generally grumpy. Option number one that you could let your mind jump to is they're upset with me. If you really want to spiral, you could jump to they're not happy in the relationship, they're ready to break up with me. One of the most helpful emotional regulation techniques that you can do in this situation is write down 10 other options. Your partner had a bad day. They got into an argument with their boss. They are super tired. They had a really bad sleep last night. Their drive home was trash. There was traffic. People were rude. There are so many other options in that scenario outside of the one that your brain has jumped to. But if your brain is wired to jump to the worst possible conclusion, you really need to train it in order to see the other options that are available to you. This is just one way to practice reframing or the reinterpretation of a situation, which can completely change how you feel about a situation. Another way to reframe is looking at a situation in a different light. And a good way to do this is actually to ask yourself helpful reframing questions like, how would my best friend see this? How would my favorite TV character see this? How would someone who finds this funny see this? How would someone who thinks that this is like a good time see this? For example, I had a friend I was talking to the other day, and they were saying how they don't like the fact that they talk a little too much and they're really trying to work on it. They feel like they take over conversations and that's something they need to work on, which is totally fair. But immediately I was like, God, it honestly is so refreshing to talk to someone that has a lot to say. Like, I love talking to people who have lots of things to say because conversations are easier, they flow better. I don't feel like I'm doing all the work in the conversation. And I caught up with them not long ago and they were like, wow, that reframe of that behavior has really shifted my perspective and kind of healed a part of me. And all I did was see her behavior from a different perspective. And for sure, it can help to have someone else in your life give you a reframe. Therapists are great at this, but it's also something that you can do yourself. You can pick 10 different frames on a situation, on a behavior, on a trait that you have in your life. And you can try those frames on. You can see what feels good. These frames don't always have to be positive frames as well. You don't always need to turn a negative into a positive. You can turn a negative into a neutral. But when you change the way you see a situation, you can change the way you feel about a situation, which is a form of emotional regulation. And getting good at that is a superpower. People that are really good at reframing have just a generally bigger one-up in life. Life is easier when you're good at reframing. Now let's talk about the next emotional regulation strategy. If you've ever had a headache and you've Googled and you've gone onto YouTube and you've looked up how to get rid of a headache, there's this video, like this classic getting rid of a headache video, where it's this guy that's going, "Where is the headache?" And you point to where the headache is on your head. And then he asks, "What color is the headache?" you think of the color? And he just keeps on asking those same questions over and over again. Where is the headache? What color is the headache? I think what shape is the headache is in there as well. And whenever I've followed the instructions on that YouTube video, my headache has gone away. You can use that strategy for headaches, but you can also use it for difficult feelings. So if you have a difficult feeling in your body, like particularly something like anxiety, this can be helpful with. And Judd Brewer talks about this in Unwinding Anxiety. Just noting where anxiety is in your body, getting a little curious, thinking about what shape it is, whether it's spiky, smooth, textured, silky, squishy, following it around your body, sort of pointing to it in your body, it has a tendency to allow your emotions to dissipate. The reason why this works is because it changes your relationship with the feeling. That's its power. It's not because you can like disappear an emotion just by following it. It's because when you follow an emotion in this sort of playful, curious, and interested way, you're letting go of any negative reactions to that emotion, and you're just letting that emotion be without wallowing in it, without leaning into it, and without judging it, most importantly. A lot of our bigger emotions, we struggle with more when we judge them, when we react to them with annoyance, frustration, with anxiety, by puzzling over them, by overthinking them. We actually give them more power because we're resisting them in our own way. When you respond to your emotions with this like light curiosity of like, what color is it? What size is it? What shape is it? You change your relationship with that emotion. And when you do that over and over and over again, in a light and playful way, not in a let's get rid of this by following it around our body way, the emotion tends to regulate itself. It's kind of a form of acceptance, but done in a bit of a different way. The analogy that I always go back to is the kid falling over analogy. If you've ever seen a kid fall over, they have this tendency to immediately look at their parent to be like, what's the situation? Is this big and bad? Or is this okay? Am I okay? And if the parent panics and is like, oh my God, are you okay? Rushes over, acts like it's a really, really big deal that they fell over and it's a big, bad thing. Then the kid will immediately start scream crying. They are going to react like this is the end of the world. However, when a parent reacts in a really calm, cool, and collected manner and doesn't make a huge fuss, but doesn't sort of dismiss the kid's feelings, obviously, if they're actually hurt, the kid tends to react a lot better. They're not panicking, they're not crying because their parent isn't panicking and they aren't crying. And the same thing applies to emotions. If you have a big emotion like anger, fear, anxiety, whatever it may be, and it's almost like there is a little part of you that looks to the other part of you and goes, is this big and bad and not okay? If that other part of you panics, overanalyzes, thinks that this emotion is a big bad thing, it shouldn't be there, it's not okay, then that other part of you is going to panic and get even worse. But when there is a part of you that is deeply sure that your emotion is totally okay, doesn't hyperfixate on your emotion, doesn't make a big deal of your emotions, then those emotions tend to regulate themselves and take more care of themselves. Which leads me to the next emotional regulation strategy, which is all about managing your attention. This is something that I will do, especially on particularly bad brain days. I think we all have bad brain days where our brain is just playing up. It's sending us unhelpful thoughts and feelings left and right. Maybe not all of us have these, but definitely a lot of us get these bad brain days. And one of the most helpful emotional regulation strategies that I use on those bad brain days is calling out that it's a bad brain day. So I will literally say to myself, you know, my brain is obviously not feeling it today, but that doesn't mean that I have to be that way. I am not my brain. This is like a weird form of mindfulness. It's separating yourself from your brain, from the unhelpful neural pathways that are popping off. It's acknowledging that you are not your emotions, which is a really important part of emotional regulation that often gets downplayed. Because the more you can separate yourself from your thoughts and from your feelings, the easier it is going to be to regulate your emotions. I share a bunch more of these strategies in my Train Your Brain for Happiness program on intention. If you're like, I really want more strategies to put in my toolkit, that is definitely where I would start. But when it comes to these strategies, I also want to be clear, there is no silver bullet that works for everything. And this is something that I really tried to find when I was first looking into emotional regulation. I was like, okay, like what's the one emotional reaction that I need to have that will totally retrain me to be this deeply emotionally regulated person. There isn't one. Some people work much better with reframing. Some people work better with acceptance strategies. Some people work better with curiosity and playfulness. For me, I find that different emotions and different thoughts work better with different techniques and different strategies. And it's been up to me to try out all of those strategies on all of my different emotions and then figure out what my go-to strategies are for different emotions. And that's something that can take you months to learn. It is harder for some people to regulate their emotions, particularly if you've got the ADHD, you've got a bit of the TISM, you've got BPD, you have, you know, any of the letters. It will be a little bit harder. And for some people, you may not have any of those things, but you might just be more emotional. And it's almost like you're at a gym, but you're starting at a weaker place. And that does mean that you are starting at a different place than other people, but it doesn't mean that you can't make serious progress in that area. That's like saying that someone that is, you know, super skinny in comparison to most people can't make progress at the gym. Like, no, that's simply not the case. Everyone can make progress when they put in the reps. I always try to end my podcast episodes with two segments, and this segment is the recs of the week. So if you really liked the topic that I talked about today, I've got recommendations for you. Firstly, unwinding anxiety. I actually recommended this in my recent episode that was all about my favorite books that have changed my life. Unwinding anxiety really dives into the curiosity technique. It does address specifically anxiety, but I do think this technique can be used for other emotions. He actually does have different theories about why this technique works than what I talked about in this episode, I believe. But in saying that, I really dig his work. I would love to have him on the podcast. The second recommendation of the week is actually another one from my favorite books video. It's called Learned Optimism by Martin Seligman, and it is big on the widening your options way of regulating your emotions. So like reframing things. It really dives into why that works, how it can reshape your life. And I loved that book way more than I ever thought that I would. Now let's talk about mini moves at the end of the podcast episode. I like to talk about mini tiny moves that you can make to actually implement what I've talked about rather than just listening to it and being like, yeah, good ideas, and then never doing anything with it. The first mini move that I'm going to suggest is start thinking about how you react to your emotions. So do you notice that you have a pattern of maybe catharsis, venting? Do you dive into those feelings? Do you have a tendency to lean into them? How do you respond to different emotions? It can be really interesting to actually map this out pre-doing any of this work. It is really hard to actually change any of your behaviors when it comes to emotional regulation if you haven't already got an understanding of what you currently do, if you aren't aware of your current habits. And with emotional regulation, it's really easy to be unaware of your current habits. Like, it took me a while to really map out and understand how I was responding to my emotions. The second mini move is try out getting curious about your feelings at least once today. We tend to experience at least one difficult emotion in one day. So if you have one difficult emotion today, just notice it. Point to where it is in your body. Get curious, get interested, but in a lighthearted, gentle way. Remember, you're changing your relationship with the emotion. You're not trying to get rid of the emotion. So you're noticing the color, you're noticing the shape, you're noticing where it is in your body, and you're kind of just continuing to do that. I also actually quite like picturing it as an object. So if that feeling was an object, like a real life thing, what would it look like? I hope you enjoyed this episode. I appreciate you so much, and I will talk with you soon.